Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me, as always, to get the ruckus going, you know him, you love him, you can't wait to hear from him, Weasel Weez, bringing it here to you at the Student of the Game Studios. Unfortunately, we are without the local hero, Chris Rankin, of the Sumter County Fire Department, but he's with his family at, like, I think he said it was at Six Flags or something.
Yep.
I don't know. There you go. You gotta love this studio, right? No, but so yeah, he's at Six Flags with his family. He won't be with us, but that doesn't mean we don't have a lot to talk about here on NGSC Sports today, where we never stop. You know, we were talking about family there with Chris. Something that got put up on the site today by one of our newer writers on NGSCSports.com, Mr. Michael Palace, was talking about how Junior Seau's family wouldn't be able to present at the podium during the induction ceremony for the upcoming Hall of Fame nuptials on August 8th, I believe they are. Yeah. And due to a rule they made in 2010, posthumous enshrinements to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio are done via videos now in an effort to keep it from sounding repetitive with the speeches or any of that. I don't know if you have an opinion in particular, Weasel, but this is kind of tough for me to figure out where I fall on this, because Junior Seau is a guy who did play, was a well-respected player and all that, and died in a tragic fashion with the whole suicide and taking his own life, you know, connected to the whole CTE and all that other stuff. And you got to get a little concerned. Granted, the rules made back in 2010, all this other stuff, about how the league looks keeping his family. I shouldn't say keeping. It'll look like they're keeping his family from making a presentation, whether it's due to a rule made 5 years ago or not. I don't know where you come out on it, but it's tough. Weasel.
Well, it's the thing about it is that it's been happening for the having the 5-minute video or such for Hall of Famers that have passed away.
Yeah.
If they made that rule this year,
that would
have been really, really bad.
Yeah.
But at least the league has saying that they've been doing this since 2010. Yeah. Yeah. So at least it's not that specific, but the daughter was really looking forward to, you know, giving a speech that, you know, how Junior would make it. So,
right.
But I guess they're going to have, she's going to be included in the 5-minute video.
Right.
And, the NFL will be able to look at what comments she says, I guess. But I think what it comes down to is that it wasn't just made this year. It was since 2010. As long as, you know, in the past, since 2010, they kept that up for Hall of Famers that passed away, then it's not, you know, it's not as bad. But it's going to look bad towards the NFL,
because
if she was up there and maybe she had some of her, like, she wanted to give awareness about CTE, and the NFL would have been a little bit uneasy with that. So they at least have an old rule to go off of.
Well, and again, we don't want to assume conspiracy theory here, but if I'm NFL and Roger Goodell, which I am not, but if I were, I would think somebody talking about that at an induction is a good thing, and let me tell you why. If that's appearing there, the NFL actually looks like they care about it and can spin it in such a fashion to kind of just the same way that they took Marshall Faulk's soundbite of, you know, Canton is football heaven, and basically made that the signature of the enshrinement ceremony and all that. I think they could take Sydney Seau, the daughter in question you mentioned, and perhaps if she did that, assuming she would even bring it up, maybe she wouldn't, but if she did bring it up to champion the awareness of brain injuries and all like that, you know, the NFL is trying to give this picture at the very least. Maybe they aren't actually doing it. At the worst case scenario, they're trying to portray this picture to the public at large. That they're trying to make the game safer, which I think to at least I think the truth is that the answer is somewhere in the middle. They actually are trying to get make the game safer. Maybe they could be doing more. But, you know, that's a different topic for a different day. That would be another hour show in itself. But I think now it's only going to look bad. And who cares, really? Okay, so the speeches are repetitive. Guess what? The speeches by the players who were there, a lot of them do say the same stuff. Trust me, I've been there, okay? It's what happens. You know, the enshrinement isn't necessarily there to be a barrel of laughs, although it was pretty awesome when Larry Allen talked about his wife meeting him by, you know, giving him a 40-ounce at their first date or whatever. But that's a different topic. It's a big moment for the players. And if the player isn't there, all that's left is the player's memory. And who best to put that forth than the family members of the player themselves? You know, I'm not saying they should have a whole group of people on the stage. Just one person speaks, you know.
And I can see that.
So, I think that at the very least where I'll leave it is that the 2010 rule is a bad rule anyway then, and perhaps this is an opportunity for them to remedy that. Not that I think they will, the NFL being the NFL, and Roger Goodell, one thing that is definitely something you come to expect from him is that when he takes a hard line, he takes a hard line. We'll see if this is a hard line he's taking or not. So, and I don't know, this is just something I thought was interesting. It doesn't necessarily tick me off, but I don't know. Just let the girl talk. Come on, man. Lose this rule.
It's at least it started there was in 2011. There was a former Los Angeles Rams great Les Richter, and he was inducted posthumously with the same way that, you know, Sayal was.
Right.
So,
or will be, we should say.
Yeah, will be. Yeah. So,
you know, so there's precedent for it. I'm not claiming conspiracy theory here per se, but it's an opportunity for the NFL to do right for the players and their own image at the same time here. I don't know. It's the award ceremonies like that, I think, are an opportunity to not only look at the past, but the upcoming future of the game as well. And actually, any induction ceremony for any sport, I feel, kind of has that opportunity. Heck, let's even go crazy here. Even the Academy Awards, like, you see actors there all the time trying to do some sort of social conscious thing in their speeches too. I mean, whether you think that's a good plan or not, perhaps that's a different topic, or maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe I'm in favor of that concept. Maybe I'm overthinking it. I don't know. Like I said, it's just something interesting that Michael Pallas wrote up there. That was something I didn't know was going to happen. And if I were going to the Hall of Fame this year, I wouldn't have known it until I got there. So, there you go. Boom. So, anyway, speaking of the Hall of Fame, something we'll be debating about at some point is whether Adrian Peterson belongs in it. But that's a different topic for when that actually happens. Something he did, I think that'll help as far as goodwill towards his name. He has since restructured his contract with the Vikings. Weasel, walk us through that a little bit as the resident Viking fan.
Essentially, for the last 3 years of his contract, Peterson, he would have earned about, it was the last 3 years of his contract, which would be about $44 million. Now, the thing about that was that Peterson was like, you know, that's a lot of money, but I want some guarantees.
Yeah, I was about to say that $44 million, there wasn't much in guarantees with that, was
there? There wasn't any guarantees.
There were no guarantees.
Yeah,
I missed that part.
He had like the whole thing last year with the beating and him being suspended the last, I guess it was six games.
Yeah,
of the 2014
officially suspended
season.
for the last six games and then held out a number as well.
Yeah, I think it was from, let's see, six, and then it was nine games where he was paid to be on the exempt list.
Right.
So yeah, it was still, for the Vikings, it was a big chunk of money. So 2015, he was due $12.75 million. 2016, $14.75 million. And in 2017, he was due $16.75 million.
None of which was guaranteed money.
None of it.
So if they kicked him down the stairs, they would do him, no, they were, Adrian Peterson was due zero money from the Vikings today.
So on one hand, it's like, how can he, you know, after what he did and after missing a whole season, how could he, you know, be so like, you know, like, oh, I want the guaranteed money, I want this, I want that. But the guy does. He makes a good point. So, in his new, it's a last 3 years of his contract were restructured. Mm-hmm. So now he has $20 million guaranteed. So in 2015, $11 million base guaranteed. And then tomorrow, on July 28th, he has a $2 million roster bonus. So that total amount, $13 million, is similar to what it was before, the $12.75 million. 2016, $7.75 million base salary with $7 million guaranteed. It's an injury guarantee.
There you go.
So
that's
if he gets if he gets hurt, I guess he's at least guaranteed the $7 million.
Correct. And so the way that actually works, and I'm glad you mentioned that. There's $20 million in guarantees, and some of it is injury only, right? They're taking the big hit this year, and I think the way I know it works next year is if the roster bonus comes up, or the roster timing comes up. I believe if he's cut, he's not due that money.
Yeah.
Right?
It's,
so think of like Kaepernick's contract or Andy Dalton's contract, except shorter, right?
I think what it pretty much what it came down to was that, yeah, every I guess it's maybe July 28th or around that time, I think the Vikings do have a option with him still. So there was also a $5 million roster bonus. Now, when this whole thing with escalators and de-escalators, I was a little like, what?
I was gonna say, let's not get too crazy with the details.
I'll just say, in 2016, I thought it would be in 2015, where these escalator causes would be in effect. But it says 2016, but they're connected to yards per season,
right?
And winning playoff games.
Well, the reason why that may be in 2016 is that when that's when the season would end, and you would calculate all these
yards.
Yeah,
that sounds
right. And then the playoff games would also themselves be in 2016. So that's what you're seeing there.
So in a way, he's betting on himself.
Well, those are essentially incentives. Escalators, de-escalators, whatever. Screw it. That's a fancy word for a bonus. If you make the playoffs, we give you this money.
Yeah, he's looking to run a...
Or win playoff games, whatever it is.
I think he does this kind of every year, but he's looking to run 2,500 yards this season. So that would be averaging 167 yards a game. Good luck with that. But his escalators are about at like 1,600, 1,750, somewhere around there. So they can escalate or they can de-escalate. So I think that amount would be like $3.5 million would be kind of where it would, I think, end up. So
well, and see, this is what's funny about players, you know, setting those high numbers just as a motivational tool. Like, if a defensive player says, I'm going to get 30 sacks this season, they don't really take it seriously, you know. But when a running back especially says, oh, I'm going to get 2,000 yards or 2,500 yards, you know, they look at it as all crazy as in he's guaranteeing it, you know. And it's, I don't know why that is. It just kind of seems to be the way it works out.
I think
out.
they're just different records. I mean,
yeah, like, exactly.
Like Eric Dickerson's, he was challenged by Peterson 2 years ago, and it was
3 years
ago. Yeah, 8 or 9 yards short. So it was like he was so close, but that's like one of the big rushing stats in history to have over.
Well, yeah, it's a single season.
Not only the 2,000, but to beat Eric Dickerson's.
Yeah, that's huge
record. So, now in 2017, $16.75 million. Nothing was guaranteed there. Now it's another nothing's guaranteed.
Right.
So base's amount it would be about $11.75 million, $250,000 workout bonus, $6 million roster bonus, and he can earn back some de-escalators if like in 2017. But it makes it good for the Vikings. The Vikings they're paying him about what it's going to be for the next few seasons about $21-22 million,
yeah,
which seems like a lot.
But when you think about the production he could turn out to be, it's not bad, right?
He's like, the thing about him is that I don't care if he's 30. The guy has a special talent, and he keeps in shape and everything, and so he has lofty goals. But
The way he says it, even too, that 2,500 yards is more of a motivational tool. If he comes out with 1,800, I don't think he's going to be pissed.
Oh yeah,
you know.
So it's something that Peterson was looking for. He's going to get $20 million over the next two seasons. And just as a little comparison, you know, kind of in the same area, we got a guy, Mike Wallace, who was traded, I believe, from Miami for like a fifth-round, sixth-round picker. It was a late pick.
A bag of Skittles.
And he's getting paid, I think, this year, I think it's about $9 million bucks or so.
Well, and be careful with that too. I mean,
I'm just saying that money to money, and because Mike Wallace, he does. I think he has like, you know, the physical traits, the speed, and the deep threat to be an elite player out there.
He's not the best wide receiver in the league by any stretch. Like Adrian Peterson is arguably one of, if not the best running back in the league. We don't think he's the best running back in the league, but he's certainly a top talent. And also, all that comes with Mike Wallace is perhaps a label that he's greedy for that money. He didn't beat a kid. So there's that.
Yeah, well, it's gonna come down to Teddy with Mike Wallace, because Teddy, he doesn't have the strongest arm, but the thing is he's been on his longer passes and stuff. He's usually pretty on point, so we'll see about that. But as for Peterson, he's back at least for, I would say, two more seasons, and then kind of in 2017, the Vikings get the option of, if they want to pay him, they can. If not, they can. I think it'll be minimal loss. So
yeah, I'll agree with that.
It's good news for the Vikings.
I think it's good news for both sides.
Both sides, yeah, right. Exactly. So
Adrian Peterson got some guaranteed cash. You know, it may not be as much as he wanted, but I mean, look, I don't think, especially with what happened, you know, I don't want to compare the two situations, but especially with what happened to Ray Rice and the fact that he was essentially ostracized from the game in its entirety, although allegedly there's a lot of teams that are talking about they want to see a workout from Ray Rice.
Cowboys, they should.
Well, be careful with the word should, but I mean, it's from a PR standpoint, how you touch Ray Rice at this point, I don't even know. Well, but
it's the thing that, you know, the incident, it did happen about, I think it was 4 years ago or so, right?
This is the same mistake people are making as they are with Deflategate. You're making it about the charge, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not about the charge anymore. It's about the trouble connected to it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ray Rice, you can pretty much guarantee your entire organization will take a PR hit if you actually put him on a schedule and he shows any success. Because if he shows any success, then everybody's going to hear about him. And here we come with the, oh my God, he's a child beater, you know. Just like I still make fun of Kobe and what he did in his alleged incident back in Colorado years back. You know, I'm going to call that what it is. I'm just as guilty of giving Kobe Bryant a hard time, and plenty of people would do the same for Ray Rice. Right or wrong, that's what's going to happen. You know, and it's the same thing with Tom Brady. No, their offenses are obviously not comparable, but too many people are making it about still deflating footballs. It's not about deflating footballs. It's the fact that he didn't submit to the evidence that was asked for by the league, and people keep making it about inflating the footballs. It's not about that anymore. Stop it. You know, no matter how many times we tell the people that, they don't listen.
It's that whole thing is pretty crazy. So I think in the next couple weeks, they're looking to have a ruling on Brady appeal. So
we'll see. I don't know. All I can tell you is my man and friend of the show, G. Stelio, put up an article today. It's a pretty good insight. I don't completely agree with him, because he's also making the mistake, in my opinion, in that piece of accenting the charges themselves. And you know, if people really think that Tom Brady did or didn't deflate the footballs, it's not about that anymore.
Just kind of lying and stuff.
It's not even necessarily the lying. It's just the refusal to comply.
Yeah.
You know, see, lying has to be proven. The deflation at this point, or deflation or lack thereof, of the footballs at this point, and his involvement still has to be proven. One thing that cannot be disputed, because it happened, was that Brady's camp refused to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you tell me a way that can be interpreted another way. You know, Brady's camp said no. These are the facts of the case, and they are not in dispute. I don't know how the last time you've seen A Few Good Men, but you know. You know which movie that is. It's this movie, Weasel. I shouldn't have to play this, but I'm going to because I like to.
You can't handle the truth.
It's that movie.
You can't handle the truth.
You know.
I'm telling you, it's like the Maury Show. All you need is two people. You get Tom Brady as one. Then you have Mike McNally, as the other guy. He's the alleged deflator.
Yeah.
You and are not the deflator. Woo!
It's just,
see like Brady jumping up and down like he was when he suddenly realized that the Seahawks were too stupid to run the football. Yeah, that one.
It's because on the show, I won't say much about Maury Povich, but usually there's two people.
Crazy.
Usually it's a boyfriend, girlfriend, or like a husband, wife, and they're asking, did you cheat? Did you cheat? Did you do this? Did you do that? And so they have like a pretty awesome lie detector test that. It's like, Mr. Brady, do you have any knowledge of the deflation of the footballs? And answer, you are. Wait, it's he's telling a lie or something like that. And yet the crowd goes crazy, too.
That's why I felt like I had to do that.
And come on. And the thing is from that, you could work on then the appeal and stuff like that. But I don't know. I said it before, but it's like perfect for this situation. Because you weren't wrong then,
you're not wrong now, my dude.
It's a he said and a verse a he said. And those two are the guys that are the main ones.
You are not the deflator. Oh!
Yeah, so always get a little bit sidetracked there.
See,
but
when we're more famous, we'll actually be able to get Maury to say stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah.
You are not the deflator.
We want some sound clips here.
Oh, yeah. Hell, we might even be able to do... I'll call up Demos. We'll do a video of that mess. Be tight like a vice. I don't know. Anyways, so, I mean, we were talking about Adrian Peterson, and it got me thinking... Well, actually, in fairness, on the way home, I was listening to local sports radio. My first mistake, I'll admit it, self-imposed. You know, this is my fault for having faith in local radio talent. But I live in Orlando, for the record. So, you know, if anybody wonders what local radio, sports radio I'm talking about, I live in Orlando. I'm not going to name names because, you know, I don't want people to think I'm bad-mouthing them, per se. But the discussion was being had about baseball. What's the guy's name? Oh, yeah, Alex Rodriguez. I don't do baseball, folks, so, you know, if you're screaming at your computers right now because I don't know who A-Rod is, deal with it. I just know he's the guy that did the steroids and all that.
He did in a recent game. It's pretty sad that I know this, but about three games ago or so, he did get three home runs in one game, and I believe the guy is like 39. And he also gets paid a huge crap load of money. Ridiculous.
You can't handle the truth.
So
that's the best I got. I don't have anything that'll make fun of you. So I brought up baseball and I'm like, Weasel's not a fan. He'll never know.
Hey, Sports Center. It's a trap. Sports Center. That's all I'm saying.
Ba-da-dup, ba-da-dup. Anyways, no, but see, here's where I am. They were first bringing it up with Alex Rodriguez because he didn't, you know, there's all the issues. He's having a good season so far this year, although at the moment, apparently he's hit a slump. Like I said, I wouldn't know. But they're talking about him as a comeback player of the year candidate. And there's some silliness there because he's there on the strength of steroid abuse and all that other stuff is the reason why his numbers were low. This isn't like Garrison Hurst, for example, who blew out his knee and then came back the next year still being amazing when that was still unheard of at the time. This isn't like Peyton Manning getting four neck surgeries and still throwing like a beast, or Adrian Peterson coming back like he did, like both of them did in 2012. That's the gist about 2012 as far as the comeback player of the year is concerned. Both those players deserve it, but only one can be picked. Where's my damn Highlander clip? Here we are. You try to sing like Freddie Mercury. You can't. That is a bad mamma jamma right there. They have a statue of him in Austria that I saw. Anyways, getting back on point. So at some point during this conversation, they started talking about Adrian Peterson as a comeback player of the year candidate. Okay. I'm going to let you go first on this, Weasel. But if he breaks 2,000 yards again, this season, should he get the comeback player of the year?
I would say it would kind of depend on others in the league, because the one thing that Peterson has against him is that he hasn't played in over a year, so it's like the guy's, you know, he hasn't been, you know, I don't think he'll be rusty this season, but because the guy's, you know, He's got pure talent. But breaking 2,000, I mean, if he breaks 2,000 at the, and people are going to, you hear it all the time about Adrian Peterson, the negative about him right now, the age of 30. And I think if he gets over 2,000.
Any running back nowadays, you know, the specter of turning the big 3-0 in football, right? You know.
Yeah, so, yeah, once he reaches that age, people are thinking he's going to possibly drop back. So I think it's if you compare 2 years ago or 3 years ago to today, he's got to get the comeback player there. I would say he's got to get 2,000. But otherwise, I mean, there's some, decent candidates out there. So, but Peterson, if you break the record, especially Eric Dickerson's, I think you deserve something like that.
Well, you know, I liked your analysis of the numbers and the other players and all that. That was really nice. The answer is, are you high? The dude missed time because he beat a kid, not because he self-imposed it.
Kind of make a good point there. Kind of make a good point.
I mean, hey, gosh, you're terrible for beating up your kid. But here's a comeback player of the year award. What the beep? Come on, Weasel. This was a softball.
I think it's the kind of thing that I kind of get what you're saying there.
You might possibly in like some way have a point, Kale.
It's like, huh. Never thought of that.
Yeah, I didn't think of the fact that he was a freaking child beater. You know, come on, man.
But?
You know, I mean, this is, okay, what if Greg Hardy comes back in 2016 and has 30 sacks? Is he a comeback player of the year? Hell no! Okay?
Now, the thing about him...
Michael Vick, if he has a better year in 2011, no!
Yeah.
No!
It's,
come on, man!
I gotta get that.
You have to be a player in good standing. Look, maybe morality doesn't matter in the Hall of Fame. I'm kind of cool with the fact that exists that way. But for the awards like these, for active players who take care of their business, like, for example, let's say RG3 throws for 30 touchdowns and 4,000 yards. That is a comeback player of the year. That's not going to happen, I don't think, but that would be a comeback player of the year. Doug Moore in Tampa runs for 1,500, 1,400 yards. That's a comeback player of the year. Notice how I'm using the same position. And if Doug Moore runs for 1,500 yards and Adrian Peterson runs for 2,000, guess who's getting the comeback player of the year? Not Adrian Peterson.
Fair enough.
If you'd both like that and the season's over, I'm going to whoop your butt on the... No, not literally.
Mental
like,
note.
You're not going to hear. It's not going to work like that. Although, I should get some sound bites. Hey, what's the name of the movie with the "I want my bleeping elephant back"? What is that? Oh, Ong Bak, right?
Actually, I'm thinking that one leads with to Tony the Jaa. Protector.
The Protector, whatever. Okay.
Hey, all I gotta say, Tony Jaa.
Oh no, he's kind of badass.
He's very talented. Does more like a Muay Thai kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But the guy is he does like crazy stunts and awesome fights and just like Jackie Chan. Everything is his own stunts. He doesn't have any wires or anything like that.
That's about the only thing that's like Jackie Chan with him.
Side thing.
Yeah. Well, no, dude, it's... Look, next week is when it gets real, when we start doing team predictions. By the way, for the record, we are starting with the North next week. Weasel's house.
Yeah, yeah.
Both your teams are in the North. Boom. Word. So we will be expecting, of course, both friends of the show and actually writers for NGSC Sports, Mr. Josh Zimmer and Montel Hardy next week. Because they will both be at either Bears or Montel's camp. Bears or Vikings camp. That's right. Josh Zimmer is going to Vikings camp, Weasel.
Word.
Try to keep... Let me see your hands. Anyway.
I
need both of them, Weasel.
There's a lot going on with the Vikings this year.
There really is. It's a very interesting group. And that's part of the reason why I want to have Josh on is... I don't think you can name a part of their team other than maybe the defensive line that hasn't had a significant revamp or isn't coming back from injury to be better or something like that. There's a lot of movement in that group in Minnesota.
It's in a lot of articles, breakout players for 2015, someone who's getting a lot of press. Last year, it didn't work out so much with Cordero Patterson being that breakout guy in the second year. This year, a lot of people are saying Teddy Bridgewater, the guy in the last five games of the season. He had, I think it was he threw for like 68% completion rate. and that was number three among rookies in NFL history. So the guy, I mean, he's the kind of guy that every single year he gets better and better type thing. So Teddy Bridgewater, all the NFL.com, ESPN.
Well, actually, you know who else has been talking a little bit about Teddy Bridgewater and a lot of different Vikings? In GSESports.com.
Word.
Josh Zimmer's had a lot to say about them, so check that out. You should, too. You haven't yet. That's a you problem. Get on it. He's hit pretty much every position group on the team.
That's a...
Jump on it.
Definitely check that out.
Oh, I went Apache on you. What? You know what? It's too bad I don't have that in my playlist, because it would be perfect to go to break right now with Apache. Damn it. I'm downloading it after the show. I'm pissed now. That would have been... You know how perfect that would have been, Weasel?
Uh-huh.
Damn it. I'm mad at my... Like, you can hear it in my voice. I'm frustrated with myself. So perfect. So, okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and jump to break real quick while I download Apache. And we'll be right back. Okay, so I won't really download Apache. Not until after the show. I'm a professional. Thanks. Anyways... we'll go ahead and get this break real quick while I stop the car accident that was me being ticked off about Apache, and we'll see you in a bit. You're listening to NGSC Sports Radio. Hear us live on NGSCSports.com, where you can get awesome analysis for all things sport. Or check out our podcasts on iHeartRadio, Spreaker, iTunes, TuneIn, and much more. For our latest videos, head to NGSC Sports YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter at NGSC Sports and like us on Facebook. NGSC Sports. We never stop. Okay, so we were so desperate for it. This is how it's going to work. Weasel, throw it.
Apache.
That's right. Off of Weasel's phone. Boom.
A little bit long of an intro right here.
That's what she said? Okay.
So catchy, you know?
I'm all about it.
And the hook.
This is how you know we need football. We're playing Apache off of a phone on the show. Thank you, Weasel, for hooking that up and correcting my... egregious error.
It's like, if you don't play that during a wedding, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong! So. Oh my god, that's so real though, right? Like, Weasel's been at weddings, and actually including your own, I dare say.
Yeah, I definitely was there.
Even I'll come out to the dang dance floor to knock down the girly dance at Apache. Hell yeah. Cue up Donkey Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
You better know it. And no, first of all, can we stop for just a minute, okay? Not sports related, but Adam Sandler... Why did you ruin video games with pixels? What are you doing right now?
Yeah.
The only reason why I would think of seeing that movie at home if I had nothing else to do and it happened to be on, two words, Peter Dinklage. That dude's a bad mamma jamma. I don't care. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's a little person. He's a fantastic actor, and I like what he does. Have you ever seen him on The Daily Show? Your household doesn't really watch The Daily Show. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. You do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. It's good stuff. He's been great every time I've seen him on that. Everything I watch that has Peter Dinklage in it has been awesome. Which is why I will not watch Pixels, because I am not fixing to have Adam Sandberg ruin that for me.
Adam Sandler, yeah.
What'd I say? Sandberg?
Yeah.
Whatever. Screw that guy. Nope. Happy Gilmore. That's all I need. Anyway, so... With that in mind, we got another 25 minutes of the show, man. It's cool. We got the time.
We good.
It's like Weasel's over here giving me the come on. That's what it's like. You know, I usually am giving that to you. That's funny. I feel good that happened.
Yeah.
Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
Anyways, so on a less funny topic, now you may have noticed that the New Orleans Saints defense has improved, in my opinion, as far as their personnel is concerned. Cam Jordan on defense, pretty solid player. They got a pretty good secondary. Kenny Vaccaro, good times. One such player is Junior Gallette. The past two seasons going into double-digit sacks and also playing with, I believe it was a broken toe for some time during the previous season. Yet... The word is that before training camp, Junior Gallette will be released from the New Orleans Saints. A surprise to all of us, but something that's been in the works for quite a while. Weasel, I heard you breathing. Go ahead and tell me what you got.
All right, so well, let's talk a little bit about like a contract. So just last year, the guy signed a four-year contract worth $41.5 million. That's a lot.
$41.5 million.
And so with a lot of things off the field, the NFL is definitely keeping their eyes on it. And it looks like, you know, coaches and GMs are looking at it too.
Yeah.
So in 2013, there was a Miami Beach fight. And on a video that allegedly had him hitting a woman with a belt. Yeah, that's not good. There was also a domestic violence charge
back in 2013, and I think that's where the beginning of the end happened.
Yeah, this one was a separate incident, and that was later dropped. So that one, don't know what to think about that. And allegedly, there was like this locker room fight between him and Brandon Diedrich before a preseason game. So he also, I think it's through Twitter and Twitter's the main one. And he's been saying a lot of stuff like against his teammates.
Granted, not through his own personal account, but there's been a lot of Twitter stuff out there that's been attributed to him. Yes.
Yeah, he's looks like on his girlfriend's Twitter. She does some tweets, but I think especially after the Saints release him and stuff, it looks like that he's making comments on her Twitter, because I think he shut his down or something like that.
What?
But the guy is, he blasts his former teammates.
Because you know what I call class? To talk smack on my old team through my girlfriend's Twitter account. What the bleep?
And word said he wasn't liked among the players and coaches.
Well, when you look at some of that, it's kind of true, because I kind of got my source in front of me here too. That feeling feeling amongst the players, excuse me, is that, no, to be clear, on the field, not an issue. This dude's awesome, okay? But he got his extension before, before Cam Jordan did. He hadn't received a new contract, until 2013. And had just as much production, one would argue, as Junior Gallette. Then on top of that, team leader Jimmy Graham had to fight to get every single dollar. That whole thing, is he a tight end, is he a receiver, all that came up. And yet, in the perception of the players' minds, Junior Gallette was kind of handed his by comparison. Now, I'll grant, dude definitely had the stats to get an extension, but a lot of people felt it was too soon. Some of it felt it was too high. And when that's happening within your own locker room, that can't be a good thing. I mean, right?
I think another thing was that since the guy got such a huge contract, he was on Twitter, supposedly. He was bragging about how he got like a 1 year $20 million season or something like that, which wasn't really true. But
I mean, yeah. So fiscally, it's true, but unfortunately, you better not spend that last $20 million, because another team may not pick you up. There's a chance of that. Maybe someone will give you a shot. I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out. As far as endorsements go, I'm willing to bet that's not going to come. It's pretty crazy all the way around. Okay. 1 year, 20 mil, great. You better keep in shape over the next year, because I'm fairly certain, unless someone goes down or something like that, you know, I don't know. Pop quiz, Weasel. If Jadeveon Clowney doesn't hit the field, Junior Gallette becomes a Houston Texan. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, well,
probably not. Yeah.
It's with the Houston 4-3 defense, or 3-4.
They kind of move it around a little bit, but I think it is primarily a 3-4. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, Jadeveon Clowney, he's getting healthy, and he can
he's getting healthy right now. He's being moved to the PUP list, but You know, I none of that really means anything to me until he starts missing regular season games. So
yeah, it'll be interesting though. Hopefully the guy, you know, can come back healthy, and to have a line with Vince Wilfork, you have that guy J.J. Watt, him too, and then
yeah, this bleeping guy,
and then to have Jadeveon Clowney. To have him on the same line,
brutal.
That should be pretty cool.
Brutal.
But yeah, this guy just it wasn't just like, I think with this guy, with cutting him, it wasn't just one thing. It was, there's like a combination of different things that happened, and
a lot of off the field issues. Okay, so you're caught with the league hot button right now. You commit domestic violence. Players have earned your scorn. Because hate is going to hate about your contract, which not all of that is necessarily his fault. And then on top of all that, the people in the locker room don't respect you, and you bring them, you belittle them and bring them down as well. What do you think was going to happen? The only thing that might have been protecting him from this happening sooner is, in fact, the cap space issue, right? I mean, the cap hit, what is it, like $12.1 million next year and about $5.5 million this year.
Yeah, so that's essentially tough. I guess it's for the next 2 years. The Saints are going to have to eat up about $18 million worth of salary. That's how much they didn't like this guy.
Yeah, well, and $12 million in its entire... $12 million in 2016. $12 million in salary cap next year. It's terrible.
Yep.
It's terrible.
So, what can you do?
So, I don't know. It's... Anyways... So, right. Anyway, so the next piece here is actually a bit of positive news. A guy who you may know more as a Bengal is now going to change teams and be a Cardinal. Of course, I refer to tight end Jermaine Gresham. He's a guy who had trouble seeing the field lately due to injury. And since the Bengals drafted Tyler Eifert, they may have actually decided to go to another direction, you know, with the new next generation in Tyler Eifert and all that. Tyler Eifert's a pretty good player, by the way. I don't have a beef with him.
And so it's a one-year deal and all. And I just he was for 2 years. He was a Pro Bowl
very
player.
Good, correct.
So, but last season, 62 receptions, 460 yards. Maybe could use a little bit higher. Yards per reception.
Agreed, but part of that is the fact that he did miss games due to injury, and he is splitting time with Tyler Eifert, right?
And he's got, he had 5 touchdowns and for his career, about 2,722 yards, 24 touchdowns in 74 games. So
not bad.
He's got 1 year with the Cardinals, and the guy can prove himself, and maybe he can be looking at an extension with the Cardinals or elsewhere.
Let me tell you why that's a bigger deal than it looks on the surface, okay? Larry Fitzgerald, aging but great, okay? John Brown, awesome last year. He's going to be back. And Michael Floyd, probably among the most underrated receivers in the league. That is one hell of a receiver core. Then you're going to inject one Jermaine Gresham in an offense that has a quarterback in Carson Palmer that's underrated himself and demobilized now with his injury last year with the knee. And a team who one could argue, I would say I don't necessarily believe this myself, but one could argue, or maybe I do, I don't know. One could argue, though, has a high aptitude to see a backup quarterback coming in. More targets and a good tight end is something that helps players like that. Backup quarterbacks in specifics there. So I think this isn't necessarily the most important signing they made. My opinion, that's Mikey Iupati. But that's a lot more important than you would think on the surface. I don't think Jermaine Gresham's getting overpaid or anything like that. I think it's a good move to kind of bolster their roster with a veteran. Not that Larry Fitzgerald isn't a veteran, but you know, I think that's a good play. I do. John Carlson was the guy last year. I have no reason to believe they still have him. And if they did, he's had issue with injuries anyway. I don't have the roster in front of me, obviously, but Jermaine Gresham, the new guy in Arizona. And I'll tell you, I think the only reason why the Cardinals will struggle this year will be the same reason they struggled last year. Can they keep everyone on the blasted field?
Especially, I mean, right? It's Carson Palmer's the main one, of course. And,
sure.
And he just, I think with him for the rest of his career, no more signing contracts. Just don't do it anymore. No.
Well, it's a... At his age, he probably has signed his last.
He was, I think, when he was with the Bengals, he had a, what was it, like a, I think, $100 million contract, $80 million, or something along those lines. It was a big contract, and about
it was a big deal at the time, no doubt.
Because like less than a week later, he gets, I think he tore a an ACL or something like that, and you fast forward about 6 years or so with Carson Palmer, who's having a great season with the Cardinals, and. He signed a contract extension with them, you know, all happy. Things are looking good for the Cardinals. And a week later, he tears his ACL. And so just, you know, stay away from those contracts. And it was kind of sad because the Cardinals, usually they're things weren't looking too good in like the past couple of years. And
not since the Super Bowl with that they lost to the Steelers.
Mm-hmm. So but. Recently, it was like the team was on the up. You have, you know, great defense and Honey Badger Mathieu. How do you say his last name? Mathieu.
Mathieu. What is that? I can't even talk right now. Tyrann Mathieu. There we go.
He was one of those guys that he had troubles in college, and he had talent. Everyone knew that. And the Cardinals, you know, they took a risk with him. And
well, yeah, he took a significant drop in the draft, too. He was outside of the third round, I believe,
and
he got drafted.
He was picked up, and he's like, you know, he's a big force for them. So hopefully, you know, Carson Palmer can, you know, stay healthy. And
yeah, that's huge.
We just, because I think it's interesting having a, you know, the Cardinals being back, and they can challenge teams like Seattle and such.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have beaten Seattle in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny that Cardinals defense does what it does about as good as the Seahawks defense. I'm not going to say they're better or anything stupid like that, but there's a reason why I feel that team belongs in the NFC West, because up until this year, the NFC West is far and above the best defensive division in the league. Still might be, but the Niners decline and all the players they've lost, they've taken a hit. It'll be interesting to see what happens to them. I'm prepared for a depressing turnout myself, but that's a different topic for a different day. I mean, yeah, that I want to open that can of worms right now just because it'll be sad and not happy. You know, this is something I was thinking about in the car on the way home today from work, Weasel. We got some time, so I thought I'd jump into it. We were mentioning comeback player of the year, and we did talk about Robert Griffin III a little bit. I'm going to give you a pop quiz. What kind of numbers does RG3 need to get to secure a comeback player of the year spot?
I think a lot of it is going to be it's going to matter on the touchdown to interception ratio.
Bingo.
So, because right now you have guys, I think Bridgewater last year, he's looking to, you know, improve and stuff. He had about 14 touchdowns to 12 interceptions.
I wouldn't call that a comeback necessarily. Yeah, I mean,
but no, but what I'm saying is that he did have, like, his first season, Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And he had, I think, really good numbers. And, but for, if he wants to get the comeback player of the year, I would say about, my number would be about 20. About 24 touchdowns, and I'd say about less than 15 interceptions. Because the thing is people, a lot of people are saying that he may be done.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of, I mean, the guy, he made some bad judgments in staying in games where he may have been injured.
Oh, I don't think that was him.
Well,
I still blame Shanahan for that playoff game.
It's tough for a guy to take himself out.
Correct, and it's the coach's job to keep him from doing so.
And it's just I didn't like how he was when he got a concussion. I think there was like, go back in, maybe go back in. Should I play? And then playing the following week, he did the same thing. And when he was with Baylor, he got a concussion. Next week, came back, played great. But now he's got, I mean, he's got like his knees to worry about, concussions. He has a history. So
yeah,
it's just the guy needs to learn how to slide. He needs to be
yeah.
When there are times to dive for that, you know. if there's like, if it's the end zone, if it's maybe for like a first down, but you don't, if you're past the first down line and you see people coming, slide.
Let it go. It's okay.
So,
you know,
he does, he has talent. It's just, it's those little things that, it's, you don't think about for a good quarterback to, save his body. Just, there are times, but he's, hopefully he's learning that, because I think maybe this year or possibly next, he doesn't have much, the Redskins aren't going to give him much slack. So, we'll see how he plays this year. And, if he bombs, I don't know, you may see a Robert Smith, Robert Griffin III be cut. That I'd say that's a possibility for next year. So,
yeah,
but,
well, actually he has a 5-year contract, so they just may opt to not renew.
Yeah.
So, which I don't think is a bad move at all, frankly.
He's definitely one of those players that he definitely has a shot at comeback player of the year.
By the way, you mentioned last year's rookie of the year being Mr. Bridgewater. The Student of the Game panel unanimously selected their offensive rookie of the year. Do you remember who that was?
Was it Odell Beckham?
It was Odell Beckham.
It's just that guy had, he had such a ridiculous catch.
His numbers were great too. 91 for 1,305 with 12 touchdowns. It's ridiculous.
But his last six games, I think it's, didn't he, I think his lowest one was like, what is it, 130 yards or so? And
I honestly don't remember that. All I remember is he was out 4 games with injury.
The first 4 games, he the thing about them though is that he does have like hamstring problems and such. So that's why people were early on, they were like, how's he going to do? He's missed 4 games. But the guy's an incredible talent. And first, if you play against Richard Seymour, the cornerback for Seattle, you play against people, a lot of people say it's either him or Revis that are best cornerback in football.
Right.
When you get,
or perhaps there's some Patrick Peterson
constituents
out there.
He can make an argument for that too.
Right.
But whenever you get props with an all pro cornerback, because he's very fast, his routes are crisp, and it's all an emotion for him. And I think it's what's great about him is that he last season, what he does before the games, one thing he practices is that you have a quarterback, or I think they can maybe get like
the backups will do it.
Christian Ponder would be good at this. They can grab him because you have the guy throwing back to him. He says, "Throw it way away from me, just
so bitter,
over my head," or just throw some bad passes, and the guy does these ridiculous catches. And so people, I think early on, would say he's showing off, which it can be seen as showing off. But the thing is when he gets in the field, he practices that kind of stuff. So when he made that miraculous catch and stuff, that's the kind of thing he practices. So that's, I haven't heard that for a player. So he definitely, I gotta say, I mean, come on, the guy had such a comeback, and he was one of the top players in the league with all these great wide receivers. You had what, Mike Evans, you had Carolina wide receiver.
He was the unanimous midseason rookie of the year for 2014, Mr. Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin Benjamin, yes. And
Sammy Watkins, too, did great. Doesn't get enough love because, again, so many great rookie receivers.
Injuries, and he's on the Bills.
And he's on the Bills. That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
2012 was the year for new quarterbacks. 2014 was a great year for wide receivers.
Oh, yeah. It's you don't see that often where you have like the wide receivers all on the board in the first round were pretty solid.
Oh, great. Absolutely great.
So let's see. So.
Anyways, but you got something else there? I was just about to wrap the show. I see you vigorously typing away.
I'm getting there. I'm almost there.
All right. Well, I'll tell you something I think is funny on here as I'm looking at. I happen to be looking at our awards for last year. You know, both you cats broke the rules and picked 2 players for MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, but I can't blame you because it was J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
But
hey, who was the number one player in the top 100? I believe that ESPN does
it. No, it's not ESPN. It's NFL Network.
NFL Network.
And it's J.J. Watt.
And
yes, absolutely.
Picked by the players.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, I was amazed to see that they actually got it and not a quarterback. Not that I have anything against Aaron Rodgers. I'm not trying to imply that at all. I, you know,
I'm gonna throw out some numbers here. So, for Odell Beckham Jr., starting week 9, okay, I'm gonna just go through the yards: 156, 108, 93, 146, 90, and then his last four games, ridiculous. You got 130, 143, 148, 185. Bam, bam, and bam. And against Seattle, he had about 108 yards. So
let me be clear: I'm benching him because he had a 90 yard game in
there. I know, right? He should have been, you know, in triple digits. I mean,
screw that.
Overrated.
Totally.
So, gotta stay healthy, and don't mess with hamstrings. So.
Yeah, I mean that is a rough injury for a player to have in general. I agree with that, but I mean, hey, look, bright futures all the way around.
Actually,
there.
One, I think I've been talking much about fantasy lately, but Odell Beckham Jr. Is he worthy of a first-round pick?
Let me tell you why that's tough. For one, you never know what you're getting from the New York Giants. You just don't. They can come out and play good one week. They could come out and have Eli throw 5 interceptions and lose to the 49ers while they were on their decline last year. Moreover, a significant return to the field. You should know the answer to this within that core itself in New York. Can you think of him?
Hey, there's Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz.
Yep.
Good for the Giants, bad for fantasy points. You're now splitting points.
Oh, but you're still going to throw it back home.
Yeah, oh, no, he's definitely going to still throw it home. Don't get it twisted. I'll put it this way. Let's just expect a lot more 90-yard receiving performances from Odell Beckham with Victor Cruz. I don't know. For first round, well, you know, first of all, as fantasy goes, for me, drafting any receivers in the first round isn't a good idea.
It's the one that kind of changed
maybe
it was
Calvin Johnson
was the one that
maybe.
Yeah.
Also we're leaving out the part where it depends entirely on your points, you know. Is it a
reception league?
Yeah.
Points per reception.
Yeah. And by the way, if it's not, you're doing it wrong, but I digress.
From six receptions up to 12, and that was through 2, 4, 6, 8.
I mean, his presence.
About 10, yeah.
His presence alone is worth a touchdown. That's what that tells you. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So
I don't know.
Little side thing there, but
I don't know that he's worth a first rounder, but he's definitely a top receiver. I would possibly even go top 10. Yeah. I'm not brave enough to say top 5 because fantasy's funny and trying to predict the Giants is impossible. You know, I was talking to one of the personalities for NGSC Sports in a lot of places, Mr. Ernest Christian of Earnestly Speaking. I'm actually a guest on his show every now and again during the football season. Actually, look out for a separate pod when the season starts of he and I, both on NGSC Sports and the Happy Hour Network, our affiliates. But him being a Giants fan, I told him it's just too difficult to predict the Giants. I always seem to pick 8-8 for them, it seems. He's like, yeah, I see them basically going 12-4 or 6-10. You split the difference, what do you get? 8-8.
I think their last Super Bowl year, I think they got into the playoffs, I think it was like 9-7.
Darn right.
So
anyways, we could go on and on, but there's no need to when it comes to the Giants. Chris isn't here. He'll just have to live with it. He's at Six Flags, which means we're done talking about the Giants because we're also done with the show. You can check us out on Twitter at the SOTG. Of course, hit up Weasel on Twitter as well at Weasel the SOTG. Of course, the website www.ngscsports.com. Please check out the YouTube page for the Sports Symposium. We do have another one in production there, but the first two episodes are there as well. That should be a good time all the way around. Yeah, but for Weasel, well, actually, I'll do it one more time.
Yeah, boy.
For Weasel, Chris Rankin, and of course myself, Kyle Nash, the student of the game. We will see you next time. Class dismissed.